infrastructure that exists. As you remember, during the hearings, we had a lot of complaints. So I just want to see what's on the ground and where the problems are and why. Then tomorrow we will deal with a report back on the hearings, the standards. If you're ready, I'll be ready. Be ready by tomorrow. And then Transfrontier Parks also tomorrow. The challenges we face there. Okay? I think those are the last two. And then hopefully next week we'll, whatever outstanding reports and minutes there are, we'll see how much of that we can get out the way before we start. Just to say, we have now, on the weekend, when did you, Lego, were you? You keep the disappearing. Slalapunch. Yesterday we handed in that application for China. In principle, the Chinese have agreed. Send us another letter to say they agreed. So we've handed in the application. As I said, I've applied for all of you, all the active ones. Only I know who the active ones are. So when the names come and you're not there, you know you're not an active member. Now I've applied for 11 members. I've applied for both DA, for Ms. Ferguson, Mr. Kalala, Ms. Kosana, Manganye, Charlie, Lomo, Kunzile, Toteti. Those are our active members, so I've applied for all of them to attend. And we'll see what the response is. I have done it on the basis that we haven't done any study group tours like other committees have, and that all of the members must attend. We've put down the 29th to the 11th, 29th of June to 11th. So a week after we adjourn. Of course, that may be a problem in its own right because it's during leave and constituency, but we'll see what they say. So just to know that that is on the cards, and we'll find out soon. Well, those applications sometimes take longer than we'll be lucky we get an answer before the 29th of June. They take longer than that. But I'll try and push it as we go along. So just be aware of that. The trip to China hopefully is going to happen. Any other issues? Oh yes, the NEMLA First Amendment is back. I asked the department to try and show me what the amendments are, but they've done it in a way that I can't understand what's going on. So I see Mr. is here. What I was trying to do is to try and find the bill, the act, plus the amendments we made, plus the new amendment, the NCOP, so I can look at it holistically and see if we need to, because I'm not sure what the NCOP passed in the end. I know they passed that one clause that I discussed with you, which was fine, the issuing authority clause makes the bill clearer than it is now. So that's fine. But I wasn't sure, and then you said there was one thing they didn't want to pass. That they passed in there. But now why didn't they pass it? Well, you couldn't find where the Treasury agreed. And you still haven't found out. Yeah, but I'm frustrated because this committee has passed the clause. Now the clause is now not passed because you can't find the letter that told you. Next time explain to the NCOP that when a bill has gone through cabinet, cabinet has approved that the Minister of Finance is part of cabinet. And why they then need another letter to say when cabinet as a whole is approved and when, you know, finance, I just, it's beyond. So we need to see whether we want to sit down and have mediation with the NCOP just for that one clause. But I need to see more clearly, you know, and Linda has done some stuff for me, she's, but I'm not seeing clearly from there. Sit down with her and make sure that, you know how I like to see it, so I can see the whole picture. It's difficult if other people's stuff done before I come back to the committee. So we'll have next week to come back to the committee to try and then sort out NEMLA 1, okay? All right, I think those are all the preliminaries. Ms. Beaumont, good morning. Over to you. I see you've got a huge package for us. Over to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Honourable Chair, and good morning, Honourable Members. Thank you for the opportunity, which I think, Chair, as you've explained, really came out of the need to understand the entirety of the work that is being led by the Department of Environmental Affairs in respect of air quality management. So therefore, locate the Section 21, for example, that was discussed a couple of weeks ago within the broader context of the Air Quality Act, its various sets of regulations, and the tools and systems that have been developed to really give effect to Section 24 of the Constitution, which is about making sure that citizens of South Africa have the right to an environment and therefore air that is not harmful to health and well-being. The team that is here, if I may, Chair, just say that we have quite a solid team here. Isham Abada, everybody knows Isham very well, the DDG, the Authorization, Compliance and Enforcement.
You know, we're putting the black sheep in the department.
All right, let me not go
the legal
man. The legal man. Then Dr. Trulie Mdudi here on my left is the Chief Director of Air Quality Management. And she is accompanied by Elizabeth Mansell-Kwameng, who is the Director of Policy Planning and Regulation. Elizabeth is sitting at the back in the red.
Right, ma'am, why are you sitting there? I know you don't want to associate yourself with the department, but you'll be closer so we can hold you accountable. I'll be held accountable from the back.
Mr. Bumile Selene, who is there, he is. He's just recently joined us as the Director of Management, Air Quality Management Services. We've got, Tsitsi Mahema is not here. He's in Bonn at the climate change negotiations. But he obviously is quite instrumental around all of the national air quality indicator work, because he, as the director responsible for information management, needs to make sure that we're getting the right types of data out of the monitoring network, that we're able to put data into an indicator that makes sense to South Africans and is able to give some idea of the state of South Africa's air at any particular time in any particular geographical area. I think I would like to, Chair, if I may, stop there. The pack that you have in front of you has a memo right, okay, well, the index page is right up front, so that gives you a sense of what is there. It includes the National Air Quality Management Framework, both the 2007 version and the recently updated 2012 version. It also has the various notices, the National Air Quality Indicator Technical Document, and a list of enforcement actions initiated by air quality related or for air quality related offences. There is also a nice memo at the back under label 7, which I would suggest that would be most useful, because that gives the framework for all of the annexes, and it's a very comprehensive and thorough summary of the key provisions of the Air Quality Act and how the various tooling systems relate to it. I think if I may, Honourable Chair, I would hand over to Dr. Lee, who will take us through the presentation and will lead us in responding to any further discussion. Thank you.
Which document you call it?
The memo.
Oh, the memo.
I have
a flag. It's not a flag, I don't know why you're trying to.
I have a flag to the the APA was brought in as unconstitutional and outdated. it did not conform to the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, to the National Environmental Management Act, to the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act, and the Promotion of to Information Act. And then in 2004, the Equality National Environmental Management Equality Act, which we abbreviate APA, was established. And it came into effect in 2005 with the exclusion of the Section 21-22 as listed on the presentation. And the reason for this was to give time for the licensing authorities to build their skills so that by the time the APA comes into full effect, we are able to take over the licensing functions as stipulated in the Equality Act. So the Equality Act comes and introduces a distinct shift from exclusive resource-based air pollution control to a holistic and integrated effect-based air quality management, looking at the receiving environment. It focuses on the adverse impacts of air quality of air pollution on the ambient environment. It also sets standards for pollutant levels in the ambient air. It also sets emission standards to minimize the amount of pollution that enters the atmosphere. So, in essence, the objectives of the APA are to give effect to Section 24B of the Constitution, as DDG Julie has elaborated, and also to provide reasonable measures for the protection and enhancement of the quality of air in the Republic, the prevention of air pollution and ecological degradation, and securing ecologically sustainable development while promoting justifiable economic and social development. So in essence, when you look at the objectives of the Equality Act, it is to, of course, achieve the ambient air quality that is safe for the people of the country, but also to ensure sustainable development. So it is not to regulate, for example, industry out of business. At the same time, it is not to allow industry to operate to the detriment of the air quality. And then in 2010, on the 26th of March, the minister published a notice that brought the remainder of the APA into operation. And that notice is attached in the document as Annex 1. A few days later, the minister would publish the equality, the Section 21 notice, which you have met on and discussed previously, which is the industrial limit for all activities in the country to comply to. And this Section 21 notice is the minimum. It is to say, this is what is acceptable in the Republic. You cannot emit beyond this. You can emit under this. So it gives the licensing authority a tool to use in licensing to say the limit is 50. But as they manage equality in their local jurisdictions, if they feel that 15 plants with the limit 50 are going to lead to the incidence of ambient air quality standards, it provides them with the opportunity to make it stricter, but it cannot be made more less than that. It just forms the minimum. One example is the fact that all emitters must report annually. A licensing authority can request more frequent reporting than that, but cannot request less than what is provided in the national notice. So I'm now going into the implementation of the National Environmental Management Equality Act 39 of 2004. And this slide, unfortunately I had the old logo, but this is what this is how we define the Equality Act as turning the page on poor equality in South Africa, closing that page of very high industrial pollution and opening a new page of clean skies. And it has served as a top slide for most of the equity management presentations. Okay, I've started on the Equality Act, and I'm now talking about the different sections just to place in context the developments to date. Section 7 of the Equality Act provides for the minister to establish a national framework within 2 years of the publication of the Equality Act. The minister did so, and the such document is the Annex 2, which is the 2007 National Framework. And It serves as a blueprint of airport management and aims to achieve the airport objectives as described in the preamble of the Airport Act. So it is a legally binding instrument to all the spheres of government and to other members of the public. And I'm going to go further into describing what the contents of the national framework are. It might provision for the following annex to everything. If you go through the table of contents, you will see that it gives the legislative and policy context of the Air Quality Act. It reflects the roles and responsibilities for air quality management in the country. It also came up with an approach to air quality governance that looks at the holistic management of air quality and strategy development. This is then the part where a strategy development, the national framework defines the how to do what the provisions of the Air Quality Act are. Standard setting process, for instance, is described in the national framework as using the SIPS process to set standards and regulations, how they should be done, the quality management plans, and so on. So this led to the department establishing an MOU with the SAPS, which details how the relationship must be handled, and in cases where there's a deadlock, how then those deadlocks should be handled. It also talks to the tools for the implementation of the national framework. Here we find air quality information management, and it brings about the development of the South African Air Quality Information System, which we abbreviate the SAQIS. This is a system which should be the one-stop shop for everyone and everything that has been done in air quality management to be found there. So all the monitoring data from the monitoring stations you should find in the SAQIS, all the publications, all the pieces of legislation, the whole context of air quality management.
It's there, but there are other phrases.
I'm going to talk about the phrases of the SAQIS as we get.
That's the thing that's in the climate change.
Yes, SAQIS phase 2 is going to assist in the climate change reporting. The National Atmospheric Emissions Inventory. But it also has the monitoring data that is being measured across the country. What we are looking for at going forward is to have live online reporting, so that you can just click onto it and look at what the monitoring stations are measuring right now in any specific area. That is phase 3 of the SAQIS. It's developing in different phases. So it has the air quality publications reporting. These documents that are next here are there. And more documents, research documents, discussion documents that lead into the development of all the regulations that we have. I also spoke to the
It's not a database here, in the sense that the information that's available is not in there yet. It has to be put in there in the second phase.
The second phase is the online reporting of the emissions inventory, stemming from the listed activities.
So that the public can have access to that the second phase.
Yes. The public has access to SAQIS phase 1, which is the ambient air quality module, all the monitoring that is reported to SAQIS. Now, there is access to that. Now, there is access to the publications. What is being developed is an online reporting that is compliant to the Section 21, the industrial limit, that is under development and is being piloted now. Also, the National Framework identifies the South African Weather Services as the suitable custodian of the SAQIS, which is an information dissemination web-based system I've already spoken about. And this led to the development of an MOU with the South African Weather Services, and then the current amendment of the SAQIS bill to enable SAQIS to have ambient air quality management function.
Is that where we gave permission for SOAR to take over certain functions of that bill? That bill was withdrawn.
Chair, the main issue was to make sure that SOAR
was sufficiently empowered to be the custodian of the South Africa Air Quality Information System, and that required that there needed to be some additions to their functions because they previously had not done or been responsible for air quality data.
They won't do that until they close
up. Well, Chair, they already are, in terms of the MOU, they are the custodian. But it was felt that they needed the legal instrument. So we are already working with the South African Weather Services to make phase two and phase three, or to roll out phase two and phase three of the South African Air Quality Information System. Because I think as we proceed with the presentation, you'll see that that information system is really quite a critical tool in our work in managing and ensuring that we have the data and we receive the data from industry and from ambient air quality monitoring.
The national framework also talks to the repeal of the Air Pollution Prevention Act, how it is supposed to happen, and also the review process, because the Section 7 of the Act also requires the minister to review the national framework on a 5-year yearly basis. The national framework has given an approach to air quality governance, which we have used in the country and still use and will continue to use, because it teaches us how to deal with air quality. So we have problem identification and prioritization. First, identify a problem and you prioritize it, and then you develop a strategy of how to deal with the problem, which takes you to standard setting, policy or regulation development. If you analyze the problem and find that it requires that, or maybe it requires awareness raising, as the Deputy Minister has been involved, for instance, in the Basanjongo Makoko project, raising awareness to people that you can burn coal with less smoke coming out of it. And then you manage the impact of those activities. Now, there's also authorization, which is the Atmospheric Commission licensing of the permitting industries to emit and managing how much they can emit. There is then the compliance monitoring and enforcement part that is conducted by the legal services, and a list, for example, of the quality related cases is available in the text and annex justice. Then there's the information management, which is the monitoring and reporting of all the activities that are undertaken in terms of the air quality. There is also air quality management supervision, which I felt I must just put up front for the members to see how the structures exist, the supervision of air quality. We have the MINMEC, which is the Minister and MEC's of Environment Group, and that's the top structure. As we go down, it goes down further. And then there's the MINTEC, the Director General, and the Head of Department of Provinces, of environment in the provinces. And then we have the working groups. Air quality management working group is working group two. It is chaired by the National Air Quality Officer, which is currently myself, and it is attended by provinces. It was initially National Department and provinces. MINTEC gave directives last year to extend participation to South African weather services, and they have the function of ambient air quality monitoring now, and to district municipalities and metropolitan. So because the number became so big that the group was not manageable, we still limited the participation of district municipalities to those that are in the national coverage areas, because we could not manage a bigger group. So with this new constitution, the working group members are 50 in number. So to enable effective 55-0, yes. And then we have different provincial air quality officers for us that also happen quarterly. I must say the working group meetings happen every quarter of the year. Established groups, and we develop work plans or business plans each financial year, which we work to implement and report against to MINTEC every end of the year to say this is the progress, this is what we've done as a collective, and this is where we are. These are the challenges, the experience, and these are the wins that we've gained. So the Provincial Equality Officers also lead the Provincial Equality Officers Forums in the different provinces. Those cover all the authorities. From time to time, officials of the National Department, in fact, all the time of the during the implementation of the Equality Act, attend those Provincial Equality Officers Forums to share work packages and to get development improvement from the implementers of the Equality Act, if I can call it that short. And as the Equality Act requires, first year 18 months for review of the national framework, we have currently a draft version that was submitted for public comment, which we are finalizing and we will then publish again to be the 2012 national framework in compliance with our legislation. And with this national framework, we have taken stock of achievements made to date, and we are looking at improvement, the implementation of the Equality Act, because the inaugural national framework is a very good document that sets out the policies, but we have now implemented and have realized areas that require improvement in the way we implement the Equality Act, and that comes forth in the 2012 national framework, which is annexure 3 in the text. Also, there's a proposed amendment of the Equality Act to simplify implementation where there are problems and to just make sure that the amendment of the Equality Act.
Probably too late for this parliamentary assembly.
Well, we all
I told you guys we'd get those soldier quick. It sounds like anything happening next year is small. So if you want things done this year, you know we tell you with it, we have to take your word for it.
Okay.
You've got a regiment mover at that. I'm telling you, you're going to miss the boat. I've had it now before and I'm holding it again. I'm going to miss the boat. Those legislations in here like yesterday, we're going to miss it. We have to give a month and a half of comments. Then we have to do processing. Once we've done with it, the NCOP still hasn't passed it. Guys, it looks like you're going to lose out.
Okay, and then there's Section 8 of the Equality Act that talks about the monitoring and management of information. The national framework sets out that the minister must, the minister must, Section 8 says the minister must establish in the national framework national standards for provinces and municipalities to monitor ambient air quality, among other things, such as made short. And to this end, the different spheres of government have invested in continuous air quality monitoring hardware. Lots of monitoring stations that are available currently across the country, and this is available in the PEC, starting from page 4 to page 9. These monitoring stations are all supposed to report to the government so that they can be available on the web.
Okay, your monitoring station, your department.
Yes,
you maintain them, you collect the information.
There are a number of monitoring stations. There are the monitoring stations of the department. There are those of provinces and there are those of local authorities. But we also have some industries that are monitoring ambient air quality, which are reporting to the DACWIT so that we can have the national coverage. So in the list, you can see which ones are provincial stations, which ones are national stations, and so on. The national stations get transferred to be managed by weather services under the quality reporting office. So in the priority areas, which I'm going to get to as we go on, the department purchases monitoring stations once the minister declares an area priority area so that it can compliance against ambient air quality standards. So the full list of all government-owned monitoring stations is available in the memo. And then with one section...
What are people complaining then about? Because
complaining that they don't have access to the information. Is that what they complain about during the hearing? I mean, they're obviously complaining about pollution. Okay, so that's one thing we look at, why we're not being in that country. But they're also complaining that they don't have access to information. You say they do have access.
Yes,
sure.
They do. And
I
was trying to find out
whether that... Do they go to the station and ask, can I have the information?
They can go to the web, back with the web page, and find information for the different metro stations they want to see.
How up to date is that? Like today?
No, it's not yet live. It's, I think it's 3 months less time at the moment,
cool.
Because the data gets...
maybe that's what they're complaining about. They can't find out now. If they see it's polluted, they can't find out what the details now.
That is phase three of the So the Equality Act...
Sorry, was there any... Can anyone remember, were there any other complaints? I think it was the fact that they couldn't get information.
They were saying that they were saying there's no
monitoring
in the South Yemen basin. And this presentation, as we get to it, will show,
we'll show you
that there is monitoring.
Okay.
Because it has met the... So the Section 9 of the Equality Act is the ambient air quality standard. And this defines air quality that is not harmful to health and well-being. This gives us, it presents an acceptable level of pollution beyond which the people are deprived of their 1924 right to air that is not harmful to human health. But it also indicates that where the air is clean, the clean air is not to say in an area where the ambient air quality standards are being met, but in the area where we should go and pollute. But it says if the air is polluted, it should not go beyond a certain limit. And the Air Quality Act also talks to continuous improvement. So we have standards that are effective now and standards for 2015 because we are expected to improve, to get better this time. Of course, not for all the pollutants, but it's an approach that is embedded in the Air Quality Act. So these are the state levels of air quality in South Africa. In a 10-minute average, the concentration should be at least 500 micrograms per meter cube. An exceedance of 526 is allowed because that is how air pollution can be high and low over time, and we've got an hourly standard as well, 24-hour standard and annual standard. Now, what I want to specify here is that the annual standard is to say in a year, when you take an annual average for sulfur dioxide, it should not be above 50 micrograms per meter cubed. The TPVs are the same number, just in a different unit, so that you can just read when you get data from the monitoring station. We may comply to an annual standard, but
not
a year. So that is what I wanted to do. So the pollutants that have ambient air quality standards are listed here. The sulfur dioxide, nitrogen dioxide, particulate matter. Particulate matter is differentiated into two. PM10, which is the larger dust particles, aerodynamic diameter of 10 micrograms, is the larger part of the and it's generally mechanically produced. It's generally not a combustion product. It's usually it's your road dust, mine dust, those kinds of sources. However, combustion itself would lead to that if it's incomplete, just at the beginning of a fire, which would lead to agricultural dust as well would form part of that. And then we've got national ambient air quality standards for ozone and for benzene. This is contrary to what the NGO says, if you recall it, the other region saying there's no standard for benzene. We have a national standard for benzene. We also have a national standard for lead and carbon monoxide. The recent addition was PM2.5, which is the most, well, I would say more dangerous PM component, because it gets inhaled all the way into the lungs. Even different studies have shown that its interaction with the lung tissue depends on the toxicity of the PM. If it's highly toxic, it might be, you know, very detrimental, because it gets to the lung. It doesn't stay, you know, when you breathe, it goes all the way into the lung. And then Section 10 and 11 of the ACWA provides for the establishment of provincial and local standards, with the proviso that such standards may only become stricter, but they may not relax the national standards. To date, we don't have these other standards. We only have the national. None of the provinces have promulgated their own.
Now, they also raised that there were one or two standards that are not there. Benzene was one of them, but you say it is there. There were two others.
It's mercury.
They
spoke about mercury, and I said the person is an emerging issue in the world, in the sense that currently there are still negotiations towards the establishment of an international mercury treaty, which is due to be signed possibly in October. It is only after that it can be ratified into national law, and then we can look at developing standards. However, we have started monitoring mercury in some of the monitoring stations. Unfortunately, I didn't present the data in this presentation, but it can be made available to the committee if required. South Africa is one of the major emitters of mercury in the world, due to the fact that mercury is a component of the coal. So when we are a coal-based economy, so we do emit quite a lot of mercury, you know, levels that we cannot be proud of as a country, but something that we are dealing with is controlled in some sections of the Section 21 notice, but not obviously in all of them as we would have, because it is not there. It was just at the initial development stages of the treaty. We had not done a national inventory to look at our mercury problem at the time.
But you are already starting monitoring?
Yes, we're already starting monitoring. We've got, I think, three of the monitoring stations, including two of province and two of the national department, have started looking at mercury. We also currently have started looking at lab carbon, which is an important indicator for climate change emissions.
Lab carbon.
It does not have a national standard, but it's an indicator for climate change. In terms of air pollution,
what are we doing about standard there?
We don't have a standard.
What are we doing?
Lab carbon is covered in the particulate matter, because it's mostly a product of combustion. The way it assists us in air quality is it enables us, when we have the samples of PM10, for example, to understand how much of that is combustion related as opposed to mechanically produced. So that is how it assists, but it also gives indication for the climate change benefit.
No, go ahead. I'm really good, sir.
Okay, question 15, 14, of the Air Quality Act talks to the designation of air quality officers across the different spheres of government. A synagogue computer is playing tricks on us, but it's yes. The minister or MEC or issue municipality in terms of the section must designate an air quality official, and such person is responsible for coordinating air quality management centers in their respective spheres. So for the next, the functions of the air quality officers are stipulated in the national program, which is Annex 2. And at the moment, the minister has been, I'm the second national equality officer, started Peter Luki, because the minister feels that the chief director in the department is the person most suitable place to coordinate equality matters in the department. the provinces also designate the college officers. At present, all eight provinces have designated except for Gauteng province, and we are making follow-ups to see so that there can be one dedicated person that is a protocol for the air quality matters in the province. This, if you recall the previous slide that talked to the supervision meeting, so the National Air Quality Officer chairs the working group, and the Provincial Air Quality Officers chair the Provincial Air Quality Officers Forum as part of their duties of coordinating air quality management matters. Also, in terms of the development of air quality management plans, these are the officers that ensure the participation of all the other officials in the jurisdiction for the development of the air quality management plan. Now, and then the section 16 of the Act that talks to the development and management and implementation of air quality, that all provinces must have air quality management plans. National department must also have air quality management plan, and to date we've taken the national framework to be the air quality management plan of the department, because it provides a baseline and it sets goals and it talks to how we, what we need to be doing to achieve those goals. Municipalities also do the same and include their AKMPs in their integrated development plans. We've got a section within the chief director that deals directly with that ensures that the municipalities develop the AKMPs and take them on into their IDP plans for into their IDPs for implementation. We also have developed an equality management planning manual that provides guidance of how an equality management plan should be developed, the different stages, the kind of information that is required, and the kind of interventions that can be put in place, and how you then prioritize the implementation of those interventions, because you cannot implement everything at the same time because of the availability of resources and the feasibility. Well, I've spoken a bit about this. Section 15 and 17 stipulate the content, what the quality management should have, and I've spoken about the development of the manual, which we have revised in 2011, with now the lessons learned of where the quality management planning manual could be improved. We've done that and combined it for both the priority areas and all other quality management plans. In short, the purpose of the air quality management plan is to identify air pollution sources in that jurisdiction and develop a baseline report of the state has come. This is the area, these are the air pollution sources, and this is what the air quality in this area looks like. And then set air quality management objectives if the area is polluted. So this is what it is, this is the desired state, this is where we want to get to. And then identify the resources required to get to that. So some of the resources required, for instance, as we said in the website, was to say, we need a dedicated air quality official working on this. So it gives that resourcing in that sense. What we are trying to do now is we have realized that they have not included so much the financial resources of what it takes to undertake the function, and we're improving it on that side. And it also implements the plan and monitor and report against that AKMP. This is the desired state. This is what we said we wanted to do by when, because the interventions are also time-bound. So if, for instance, we say we want to have done, to have eradicated domestic burning, we have a time frame. So we check against those time frames to see whether we are in good progress to achieve them. And then we come to Section 18 of the Air Quality Act, which provides for the declaration of air quality priority areas. Now, the air quality priority areas, the minister or MEC may declare them, but the condition is that must be an area where ambient air quality standards are being exceeded, or the minister or MEC reasonably believes that in the future such may be the case. And the criteria for this priority area, that if it, for it to be a national priority area, it must cross two provincial boundaries, or if it's within a province, the MEC may request the minister to declare it a national priority area. For instance, they may stipulate, for example, if they land resources to deal with the problems within the province, it would be a discussion between the minister and MEC, and then it can be declared as a priority area. Provincial priority areas are areas that are within a province. To date, we have, so the section 19-20 talks to the what happens after the minister or MEC has declared the priority area, what then should happen. The air quality officers must then must follow a consultative and participatory process, which in terms of this section 57 of the AQUA indicates that before exercising any power given by the Act, the minister of MEC must follow a consultative and participatory process, which is then further described in the national framework, when we touched on that. But this is the case also with the quality management plan. So we set up a multi-stakeholder resource group, invite people in the country to mandate the representatives of their organizations to represent them in the multi-stakeholder resource group. We normally publish that after the declaration on the Sunday time, so that it is widely sent by the stakeholders. So we have basically databases of all the people that we usually consult with, but we open it up for different stakeholders. Currently we have three priority areas that have been declared, and action is in a way to address the problems. I think I will touch on that when I talk about the different ambient air quality monitoring results that we get from those. We have the Vile Triangle Asian Priority Area, which was the first one, declared in 2006, I think it was. It's in the PEC, the actual gazette numbers and the date of declaration. The air quality management plan for that has also been gazetted and it is currently under implementation. We have also done a review project to just look at whether we are moving with the implementation as anticipated. The high flow priority area, which is the wheat bank area, was also declared, and the equipment management plan has been gazetted in that implementation. The water bank for general priority area is the most recent declared one, and this was declared as a proactive priority area in the sense that there wasn't at the time major air pollution in the area. But due to the planned developments in the area, the minister believes that with all these developments coming into the area at the same time, if we don't manage up front, we might end up with the situation as we have in the high spend priority area, because it's the same kind of industries that are coming into the area. So we are managing, it has been declared and we are managing that. However, when we look at the monitoring results, which are unfortunately not in this presentation today, we find that there is already exceedance of the PM10 standard, which is largely due to the mining operations that are already taking place in the area. So it gives us a baseline to say we want to ensure that it doesn't get worse than this. This is a map showing the priority areas that we have to date. You can see the van has a green boundary, very much close to the high-flow priority area, and the waterfield which analyze the biggest. There's another thing to mention with the waterfield which analyze the fact that just across the border in Botswana, there is planned development of three big power stations, and as you would know, the air does not observe country boundaries, so there is obviously going to be a problem in the whole area which we are trying to manage up front. The World Bank, which is funding the power stations both on the Botswana and South African side, are doing a project to look at the regional economic and social impacts in that area, which of course there hasn't been much movement of late, but we are involved in that to ensure that we have an understanding of what the environmental impacts would be due to those.
Why didn't you have Southern Durban as a priority area?
Well, it has not been declared a person, and when we get to the air pollution monitoring slide, you will see that actually there has been great improvement in the air quality in that area. We which is what we measure on the monitoring station. So I think the issue at the moment, there has been skin strain, if I can call it, that people have resigned and left the municipalities. And so the NGOs have this assumption that things will fall apart. But what we measure in the air quality stations is that there has been an improvement in the ambient air quality. However, I mean, I think in terms of the legal provisions, if the MEC would request ministers, it would be declared, if of course there are resources, because the declaration of a priority area comes with a lot of resources that need to be used to ensure that.
Okay.
So currently, with the air pollution sources in the priority area, we have these as the main pollution sources. We've got industrial emissions, we've got various industrial complexes. And I just put alpha consequences there because this is how, this is historically how these areas became a problem. There are raw materials there, and it makes sense for industry to locate where they will access the raw materials cheaply than to having to transport it. But the other was not also looking at the risk environment. It would permit different plants. So we find that in different circumstances, exist in one area and it causes a problem. The other thing is the domestic burning of dirty fuels in these highly, highly populated areas. And there are many reasons for that. There is obviously a socio-economic problem of people not being able to afford cleaner energy sources, but there's also the availability of coal, because that is where mostly the mining operations are. So the discard coal gets sold to our people, and we use it, and we've got different problems as I'm going to get to when I talk about the dense strategy. We've also got a lot of mining operations that contribute so much to air pollution. In terms of the whole road, open cast mining, a lot of gas is generated from open cast mining. But also coal piles, coal, if you put a pile of coal there, called spontaneous combustion happens, so it generates much more emissions than you would originally anticipate. And we've tried to look at other measures of controlling dust from these areas, and I will get to that. We've also got vehicle emissions to a much lesser extent, but it becomes a problem because if vehicle emissions come to an already high background of pollution, we just shoot everything up. So this is basically what the problems are in the various areas and how we are managing. So I just like to go briefly into the actual map of the priority areas, the ones whose effort management plans are under implementation. These are the hotspots that have been defined in the Valley priority area. We've got Sasol Lake, Foranaheim, Kondabil, Park, Mayatin, Orange Farm, and Soweto. These have got different, they've got common sources, of course, industry is there, but the problems are differentiated when you go to the ground level. It's, for example, in Vanderbilt Park, of course there is domestic burning, but there's also a lot of steel production. And Orange Farm and Soweto, the biggest problem are the domestic burning, although you still get industrial influence because air travel. And if I may pause and just reflect on something here that was said by ESCOM in the previous presentation, that they have done studies and found that their impact is not in the residential community. And I actually tried to say, they said one of our APMPs indicated that it may be that when you look at a model, it sits on a field. But we all know that air does not sit in one place. It may come up to a specific place, but it mixes and causes a problem in the general area. So although we try and look at a facility and where its emissions would sit, it doesn't mean it does not affect the area. And then we've got problems also in the hazard priority area, and these are the areas where there's SO2 problems. I mean, we've given them numbers, and these numbers are actually the implementation task team numbers that are focusing on alleviating these problems in each of these areas. Kundalini is a huge industrial signature there, but we also have local sources like domestic denim, and Clem Kings has come up as one of the biggest sources. So we've got Delmas, Amanda Fanny, Whitman Boy, there would be your Eskoms, Steve Chetems, you know, Secunda, lots of Sasol emissions there. But there's also a wide range of transportation between the different areas. I'm not going to go into that, but this is the PM10 hotspot, as you can see, which one comes out as the biggest, and that is basically due to the extent of mining in the over and above domestic mining and other things. Then we've got section 21, which I did not write much on in the text because I didn't work in discussion with that. But it provides for the Minister of MEC to publish a list of activities which result in associated emissions and to define associated minimum emission standards. As the various minimum, if you are operating in South Africa, this is the minimum. It can go stricter, but it can get easier than this. Now, the consequences of the listing is that any person who wants to conduct that activity must apply for an atmospheric emission license. This is why we define the significance of industries, to say it is not every industry that requires an atmospheric emission license because of the administrative burden that will come to it, even for a dry cleaner or a pizza oven. So we've tried to redefine them and categorize them such that the 2021 activities are really big activities that have impact even in isolation. An example of the threshold that I'm talking about is for combustion, power generation in particular. We've said those that are in section 21 must have a boiler that is above 50 megawatts heat input. It is not to say the boilers under that do not need to be controlled. It is to say these ones that are above the 50 require an AEL before they operate. Now, during the development of the section 21, it became clear that not everything can go in, but some units still need to be controlled. So in the example of the boilers, it was agreed that we need to use section 23 of the Equality Act, which is declaration of controlled emitters. This is an emitter. It is controlled, and these are the associated minimum standards for it that the authorities can control and enforce without having to manage atmospheric emission licensing. And I'm going to get to that section. I'm just giving that clarification here to say it is not everything that happens in the country that can be listed in section 21 because of the consequences of the listing, which government still needs to manage and make sure that you don't buy more than you can do, especially for activities that are not going to give as much impact as you want to control. So in terms of the licensing authorities, defined in section 36 and 37 to 47, this is the AEL processes, this is how you must apply for it, this is the people you apply to, and this is the review process. If you transfer ownership of a facility to someone else, there's the process that needs to be followed, and so on and so on. I didn't want to elaborate on that because it's quite, I think, straightforward as you read in the act. So this is now the example I was making, the declaration of controlled emitters. Currently, we've declared small boilers, which are between 10 and 49 megawatts. Just cut out at the 21 range. The draft notice was sent to public comment, and we are hoping to finalize it. And I must say, for all these standards, ambient air quality standards, we have used the SAPS successfully. The first batch and the last one, which was the PM2.5. For the small boilers as well, we have used SAPS successfully. So when it's completed, they're going to be an SAPS standard. Section 21, I think I spoke previously about why we had to go out of the SAPS process. I'm stating this so that we are aware that the problems of Section 21 did not terminate the relationship between the department and SAPS. For all the other standards that we still develop, we still follow the SAPS process as prescribed in the national framework. Okay. Section 29 provides for the minister to declare any substance contributing to air pollution as a priority pollutant. I have not written this in the text, unfortunately, but I think the presentation will be made available. The plans in the department currently, perhaps the DG should be going to elaborate on this, is to declare the greenhouse gases as priority pollutants, because the section allows the minister to, once a substance is declared, to then require pollution prevention plans, which would then serve as mitigation plans for those pollutants once declared. However, as part of the, that's why I put it blue, but it doesn't look blue on the screen. I apologize for that, it's blue on my presentation, to say part of the proposal is to amend the Air Quality Act to enable monitoring, evaluation, and reporting against those mitigation plans. Because currently, just says, Minister, when you say pollute the substances, GHG, priority pollutants, and require plans, but does not give a specific requirement to say then there will be a requirement for monitoring, evaluating, and reporting against those mitigation plans, which we're hoping to get explicitly now in the Air Quality Act, so that it can enable the reporting against the international targets. Okay, other regulations. As I indicated, when we were also doing the section 21, we found that there are other sources within industrial complexes that don't necessarily have a stat, and you cannot control using a limit, because it's a stockpile, for example. So we agreed we would promulgate the regulations that we look at how do you manage those open sources. The other biggest motivation, at least for us, the National Department, was the amount of pollution that comes out from mining areas, that the dust pollution, that is not necessarily in the jurisdiction of the department to manage inside mining areas, but the impact goes out into the community. So we said in this regulation, they must monitor their dust at the fence line and make dust management plans, so that the dust doesn't impact on the population outside of that. And in the case where they do not, what then? There's those penalties to enforce that. So these regulations would cover things such as the mine dumps, which one of the NGOs spoke about. I mean, you cannot cover mine dumps in the 2021 notice. 2021 is an industrial limit notice. You need something else to deal with those non-industrial sources. This covers that. I've spoken about the mining dust, and it is actually a very important tool for us, because when we look at the high five coverage area in particular, where there's a lot of mining, we find that the highest contributor to PM10 is this mining, toll roads, open cast mining, and the stockpiles that exist in the mining area. So we are hoping that these regulations are going to enable us to manage at least politically in those areas.
A million ghost cars.
We have also published the model equality bylaws for easy adoption and adaptation by municipalities. So we also published this in 2009. The purpose of these regulations are basically to regulate air pollution within areas within the municipality's jurisdiction, and provide a legal and administrative framework to deal with localized sources such as sugarcane burning, which is not happening all over the country, but it's a very important source in KwaZulu-Natal, for example. So most of the authorities at the moment have adopted this. Of course, they have to follow a consultative and participatory process within their jurisdictions to do so. And they also specify further than what is available on the municipal bylaws to cater for local conditions. So this would then, for some of the sources that we, that are not necessarily a national source of pollution, the authorities are using the bylaws to manage it in those specific jurisdictions. And we have been quite successful with this to date, although municipalities are not all at the same level, and they are adopting this at different rates, but other municipalities don't have glaring air quality problems, so it is not really urgent for them to go and adopt things that are not going to improve anything in their jurisdiction. We've also got regulations prescribing the atmospheric emission license process and fee calculate, which we have consulted broadly with authorities, which developed in conjunction with the authorities, and we have created bands within the calculator. So if your facility falls within this, it's purely an administration fee to say it will if your application falls within this, it will take so much time in terms of manpower for the authorities to deal with it, and therefore it will cost you this much. We are at the process of finalizing this. I think for me, not being a lawyer, of course, I can assist on this, but I think that if you want to take a bus, it's the owner of the bus that tells you the fare of how much you should be paying. So I think broadly, once this is agreed by the authorities, it's a matter of sharing with the public to say, we believe this is how much it's going to charge you, cost of business in South Africa, and because obviously authorities spend time to go through those applications. And I believe it's quite reasonable if you look at the bands, because we've got for small operations, of course, but if you look at your vessels and all these other big investors, you will not be expecting to pay 20,000, the same as someone who is just starting. And we have provision to pay that application fee over a 5-year period of time. We've got atmospheric emission licensing form, which was also gazetted, but then again, the example that I make for this one is to say this is the information that government requires to make a decision about how much you can emit. Looking at your facility, looking at the ambient air quality, which is what we are trying to manage. So if, for instance, you want to go and apply for an identity document and they say you must tell us which hospital you were born, if you say it to Home Affairs, the fact that I'm here is evidence that I'm born, I don't think it would suffice. They want to know where you were born to issue you with that. So, similarly here, we want to know exactly what it is that you are putting into your body so that we can get an understanding of the emissions that are going to come out of it. Because if you are burning wood, you'll get different emissions from if you are burning coal or if you are burning used fuel, for instance. So we had a bit of an issue here with industry saying we are requiring much more than we need and so on and so on, but this is also in process to be finalized because it is the information that government needs to make a decision. And it is not outside the legal framework to request for that information. We've also got a dispersion modeling regulations which we have said for regulatory purposes. This is how a person should conduct the air dispersion modeling. The importance of this is that when we require an atmospheric impact report from a facility, we require that facility to prove what their impact is on the resident environment. And dispersion models are computer things. You put garbage in, you get garbage out. So we want to be sure that what we are receiving gives us enough information to make a decision about whether the facility is impacting negatively or not negatively. It does not, this regulation does not stipulate for everything modeling in the country. So, for the first purpose, you can still use any other model that you would like because there's a plethora of them available. But for the regulatory purposes, we specified how it should be done because we have to make informed decisions. And then we've got, which I've called non-conventional sources of air pollution. These are the most difficult sources of air pollution to control because you cannot necessarily use the command and control tool. We are talking about domestic combustion of dirty fuels, which happens mostly in dense low-income settlements. I've touched on that briefly earlier. But the biggest problem here is that the impact is massive and it happens right here at spreading zone. It is not to say when pollution comes out of an Eskom deck, for instance, it is not significant. But pollution that comes out of an Eskom deck has an opportunity to go into the air and disperse and get mixed before it gets to people. But this, as soon as you make the fire, you have started inhaling, and it has major health impacts. In fact, I have to stop myself on this because this is a subject that I'm very passionate about. But there are many reasons. There's lack of alternative energy sources, lack of money to afford better sources of energy. So it's just a very big problem that we have in South Africa. And it requires concerted effort from government, because the one who is responsible for the provision of clean and safe energy sources must come into the party. The one who is responsible for human settlements must come to the party. So to this end, a strategy has been developed in consultation with all these other departments, as I have mentioned, and has been presented to the clusters. It's on its way to cabinet approval. At the moment, the action plan for the strategy is being enhanced so that we have time frames A similar problem is that of VAC emissions. VAC emissions have both the cause and the pollution and climate change problem. But the problem for air quality is the old vehicles. It's not so much the new vehicles, because those are built according to spec and they emit low. This, which then becomes a socio-economic issue, because it means a person who can settle afford a new vehicle now must be penalized. Look at the revamped strategy for the taxes, which was highly controversial. I mean, all those kinds of interventions. So we've also developed a strategy which is in draft now, in consultation with Department of Energy, Department of Transport, SABS, you know, to put minds together and say, how do we deal with this problem of vehicle emissions? Of course, it is not a problem in all cities. It's just the major, highly populated cities where you have a lot of vehicles. Population where this has become a problem. So I now talk about the state of air in South Africa from 2005 to 2012. Mentioning that if not all monitoring stations have started monitoring in 2005, but this will be clear in the slide which ones are monitoring and which ones are not. But up front, we have minimum data requirements to say data from a monitoring station, at what point does it get included? Because we've got a lot of monitoring stations who would like to include all of them, but also want to get an indication of the major area. So we look at sampling locations that represent regional, urban, neighborhood, and source-oriented special scales. We look at long sampling periods and durations that represent a range of source contribution conditions. We also want sampling sites that are measuring criteria pollutants. To date, we've used PM10 and SO2 to present the state of air. It is not to say those monitoring stations are monitoring only those, but when we're looking at a national scale, we cover those monitoring stations. The one important thing is that data recovery must reach an average of 80% or above. So if a monitoring station, even if it's in a very good location, if the data recovery is not up to 80%, we don't include it, because we want to compare apples with apples. You might find that monitored for 2 months and monitored very high levels, you cannot compare that to a station that was monitoring for the full 12 months of the year. So it provides a problem in terms of comparison. So the monitoring stations covered in the state of at the moment are Cape Town, Etegwini, Swane, Vaal Triangle, the Paris area, the Paris area. Eskom, we only have data for 2012, as I indicated. Some of the Eskom stations have started reporting data to the circuit. In the future, this will improve, but of course it will be data for that year that it has started meeting the requirements. We don't go back. This is what we see in Cape Town. This is what we measure as annual averages of PM. It is below the standard, that is borderline, which means there's excess. But if you look at the blocks, you see, well, these are the different monitoring stations, and these are the different years. Annual standard is at 50 micrograms, 40 meters. But as the years go by, in the different mountain stations, there isn't. The TM time goes up and down. And that is purely because.
That's amazing. The four shores used to be the highest drop.
Mm. Yeah.
Kailicha
yes.
improved.
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, Kailicha is now shot up completely. There's no real factory in Kailicha. It's actually burning on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look at those last three. That's Kailicha. Kailicha's always been high. But the others are somebody that dropped. Kailicha's been high. They stayed at least. The others have dropped. Okay.
And then FL2 in Cape Town. Yes, it is below the standard, but it's an increase and it's concerning. And the authorities are working to find out why there's the increase and what can then be done to improve that.
Everywhere except Woodward.
Where's the south?
Okay.
Etagwin. This is Etagwin over the years. This is what I was saying to Putin. I said, when you look at the monitoring date, of course, there are no, we are not where we want to be, but there are improvements. If you look at 2000, different monitoring stations are measuring improvements from time to time. And although the issue with air pollution is that what you see, when you see a smoke coming out of it, people think that it's, of course, it contributes to air pollution, but you cannot really see it. You can't see when you look outside that the area is highly populated and just as the level that comes through. It is when we measure that we know what the state of air is. That is why we emphasize the monitoring station meeting minimum data requirements, because we want to see. Then you sit with this spreadsheet that shows you there's a problem in some areas, there's improvement in some areas. And you know, people think there is no improvement, but what we are measuring is showing you that there is improvement. Of course, we can always do better. The Equality Act talks to continuous improvement, but we measure to know where we are at the moment. And a lot of work has been done in the South Cape Basin for us to see what we are doing today. There were problems with targets and everything. We see in SO2 is also not above the standard. We had, for example, a meeting with the NGOs saying the minister should declare South Durban a priority area. Of course, there's speed drain and something needs to be done. We are working on it. But in terms of the criteria of the declaration of priority area, this area does not meet that criteria.
That's when you say they don't meet the standards, that's the annual standard.
Yes, the annual standard. That would
so made during a particular
yes.
time.
Yeah,
I
yes.
For the year, that's what we mm-hmm. Okay, go next one.
This is planning. We have problems in planning of the end. Yes, over time, but the issue is the domestic planning as well in the townships that affects generally growth in the region. However, SO2 doesn't seem to be a problem except for 2009 at Pretoria West. It exceeded quite considerably in 2009. This shows that there is a need for far more work in the Vatra Enterprise area. And as I spoke about the main sources, the difficulty here is that it is a combination of sources. And when we look at the air quality management plan, we find that even if all the industries would clean up, we will still have accidents. Purely because they are close to each other, and also because there are other sources like domestic burning and vehicle emissions and mining in the area that you cannot just give a limit in an atmospheric emission basis. That is why this concerted effort from in all the federal governments to implement and reduce this problem. In terms of also too in the Maritime, it's not a big problem. But the important thing to say is that even if SO2 does not exceed ambient quality standards, it causes a background and an environment whereby the mixing of the pollutants, photochemical reactions, for instance, of the noxes, lead to the development of ozone and all other. So it's not to say if SO2 is not a problem, then let's leave it. We cannot leave it. We still have to manage SO2 and bring it even further down to access to cleaner levels. The hyperbaric air is one other problem for us in the country. Obviously, without pointing fingers, we've got very big industries in the area. We've also got highly populated areas, Kwakupa and Valente, some of the townships that are there, and burning lots and lots of coal.
So the biggest problem we've got is the particles in the air, big particles. That's the first slide you do every time.
Yeah.
And the first slide seems to be worse than the others every time.
Except for Haifa, we also have a problem with the soldier.
Well, what do you see there? You see that?
So we also have a SO2 problem in the Haifa. Without pointing fingers, one would think that perhaps the agglomeration of Eskom has a contribution to make.
Yeah, putting all the Eskom in the same place is not the right idea.
This is not just the PM averages across the country, all the monitoring stations put together. You see that Johannesburg, even though it's not a priority, has a PM10 problem.
So is mine, though?
Yes, I would say that. But the priority areas, yes, these come up very strong. The Eskom stations are also measuring accidents of PM10. And that is because they are in the priority area as well. And what we try to communicate to the experts, even if a monitoring station belongs to ESCOM, it actually measures ambient air quality data. It does not measure in isolation what ESCOM is emitting. That would be emissions data, stack emissions data. But once it's outside, it measures ambient air that any other monitoring station would be measuring, no matter who owns it. Hyperbaric stands out quite strongly when it comes to
how do you choose where you put the station when you don't want to put it in that area? Surely if you put it close to the factory, it will be more concentrated. If you put it further away from the factories in the same area, it will be less concentrated.
No, unfortunately. The National Agreement has given a criteria of how you would place the monitoring station. So far we've used the highest populated areas because we want to see what the impact is on the people in those areas. When you do research and monitoring in air quality and you try and do soft apportionment to look at who the major contributors would be, you actually get disappointed in a way, because when you start on a research, you have an idea of what you want, of who you think the major sources were. If I can refer to my PhD thesis, when I started the research, I was thinking the major contributor to the PM at Wakuka was the domestic coal burning, because my topic was domestic coal burning. But when I started analyzing the samples that I obtained, I found that the major contributor was the soil. the fact that there's bankrupt, there's no grass and paving and so on. The major contributor was the soil.
Blowing
it. And then coal combustion came as the second. And then industrial, and then vehicles and so on and so on. So I think South Africa, we are progressing to the stage where when you talk about the monitoring data like this, we're able to source a portion correctly.
Just for me looking at this stuff, a lot of interesting things come out of it. I mean, I didn't realize that big particles are the worst problem. Secondly, that we're getting better in most areas, except in domestic. I mean, kind of reach on those places. So your domestic, clearly, there's no specific thing where every household you can't do something about. So you need to look at domestic, and you need to look more at the big particles. Of course, as you said, you must look at all other things as well, but the others we seem to have, as our system works better, it seems to be working better. If you just look at the general state and make more of what you've shown us. I mean, here again, so you can see this, it's a state below and probably getting better. Very fascinating. This as a layperson that's never looked at this, I would have thought about it differently. I would have thought of industry as the worst.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to explain another concept and try not to get into the scientific detail. The other issue that we have is the meteorological conditions, which enable the mixing or non-mixing of air pollution. In the winter, we have cold weather, and that is when, in fact, that is when most people then cold. Now, it comes at a time when meteorologically we have the inversion layers, which makes the air pollution to be trapped in a specific area for long periods of time and increases massively the exposure to the pollution of the people. So, I mean, especially if you look at the high salt, it's a very, very unfortunate situation because of the way the meteorological conditions of the high salt are. And the fact that this particular phenomenon happens in the winter when people actually burn more because it's cold. So we find ourselves between a rock and a hard place. And then we have developed the National Air Quality Indicator, which we use to monitor the state and trend of ambient air quality in South Africa, firstly. Secondly, to monitor the efficiency of air pollution intervention, policies, regulations, effort management plans, and the technical document of the indicators including the fact, I think it's an extra 5. The principles, I mean, the whole methodology, the equations of how it's developed and how it fits into the broader scale is available. But I just thought, let me just take out the principles into the presentation to share that we want this indicator to be simple to understand, but not simplistic in the way that you don't just look at it and simplify everything and say this is the equation, because it looks at a broader scale of where the of what the inequality is, and also has to be credible in terms of the methodology that is used to develop it, transparent and complex enough to report at a broader scale what the issues are, but transparently so that it can be duplicated and reproduced in other areas of the country, and also it must be sensitive to the changes that we see in the this is the list of monitoring stations that report into the indicator that meet the requirements specific for the indicator. We've got 45 monitoring stations, and it is not just the monitoring stations that are in the current area. So the monitoring stations that are owned by the other spheres of government, they meet the criteria that are included. So we've kept the indicator constant for the period of 5 years, which is 2008 to 2014, different next. Yes, because then in the next 5 years, the ambient air quality standards become stricter, and we then review the baseline. For example, we've got new monitoring stations in the waterbed for general coverage air, but we cannot include them now because it's the reporting cycle that we have fixed, and it would therefore shift the baseline and not give us an indication of how we have been doing over time. So in 2015, when we start the new reporting cycle, we will then revise the number of stations and start with a new baseline and monitor over time. This is what we are seeing.
What are you saying? The new one that you created, why you can't? I mean, I understand that for where you've measured them, if there's been 20, you measured those 20. I understand that. But what does it matter if you add to that in different places than you were previously? All that is going to do is going to give you measurements for the period that you've got that station for that area. It doesn't mess up your figures here.
In terms of the 2% in the state of air, we include that because that looks at the annual average of what those monitoring stations are reporting. So yes, when we report the paper of air, we use them. But this one is specific for the areas because we want to see over time whether we have any improvement in terms of the national ambient air quality standards for those areas. And if we change the baseline every year, you will start introducing a variability of sources which is not therefore giving you constant measure of where you are with the implementation of the air quality standards. So at a national level, and I must emphasize this, when you average nationally, this is what SO2 annual average is. This is what we mean by simple but not simplistic, in the sense that we have areas in the country that have a problem of SO2. But at national scale, there's an improvement. Similarly with the PM10.
Which one is the SO there or this one?
SO is the top one.
That's going down all the time.
Okay. And PM has been going up except for 2012 when it has started coming down. However, that would change in 2015 when the ambient air quality standard becomes stricter.
Okay.
So this is what, if you superimpose now the sulfur dioxide and PM10 over the ambient air quality standard, this is what we see. And we take, for the indicator, we take the maximum of the two. And this is what we are seeing when we use the formula that is documented in Annex 5. We are seeing an improvement at national scale. The indicator must be one. And one means compliance to ambient air quality standards. So at national scale, we look good, but in the specific areas we have problems which we are managing. It's improving over time in some areas, but it needs focused attention and resources. So I just went briefly onto the stands for the future, and this is not all of them. We are amending, I think, we've spoken about how the effort extends this year. We continue with the implementation of the Equality Act and the National Framework. And we've got the phases of the circuit. So far we've identified three. The first of all, the information dissemination portal for all the documents, policies, regulations, all of that. But phase one is the ambient equality module, which is the fact that you can go onto the web and get ambient equality monitor data. Phase two is the establishment of a national atmospheric emissions index, which now says you have an atmospheric emission license, these are your limits, you must now report to this system what it is you are emitting. That is going to give us a coverage at national scale of what the emissions are, and also the greenhouse gas emissions to report to the UNFCCC or the industry certain atmospheric emission license by law they have to report. The phase three is now the forecasting and modeling, which is will come in with online reporting. When you can go onto the system and see what the emission, what the air pollution is like, where you are at that time. We are also developing an index to go with that, so that it will have health messages. For instance, if it's orange or yellow, it should pop up a message that says, in this area, the air pollution is becoming critical, which would then assist more sensitive individuals to know how to manage their movement. Because we do have certain individuals in the population, it's children, the elderly, and those people with previous respiratory problems like asthma, which are not necessarily, asthma for instance is not caused by air pollution, it's a genetic problem, it's made worse if a person is exposed to air pollution. We are also doing an audit of government-owned monitoring networks, because from time to time we find that some monitoring networks are not maintained properly. And because these are very expensive assets, it's a loss to state funds to charge a monitoring station of 7 million but have not planned maintenance budget in the municipality coffers such that it does not become maintained and it's dead. I know the portfolio member requests to send away monitoring stations from time to time. It's a problem that we are aware of and we are dealing with. It's one of those problems that we're trying to manage with this project of an asset management system and a maintenance plan that would show us that a monitoring station so-and-so sitting in Jabavu needs a replacement of these two. Its lifespan is because all things have left. But this is the project that is going to assist us to avoid stranded government stations. We are also looking to develop an access policy for air quality management in South Africa. The main motivation for this is that we have done studies and have found that even if all the industries were to meet the Section 21 limit, in some areas we would still have accidents because of the other sources of pollution, as I've mentioned, domestic coal burning being one of them. And so we are developing this policy so that we can give government an opportunity to work with industries in those areas to invest in the populations of those areas. For example, the police is not say it, I'm just making an example. For example, instead of buying a 4 billion rand FGD, spend 400 million rand in the community of Embalenhle and electrify their houses and give them subsidized electricity. Spend 2 billion rand in this community and buy them LPG stuff so that they stop burning coal for cooking and heating and subsidize their LPG. So that is where we are getting to with the offset policy. And we have started talking to different industries. And of course, it will come back to the portfolio committee for testing to see whether we are in the right track. And it will be consulted broadly with the stakeholders in the country. But it seems to us it's an opportunity to get somehow with the quality management, concerted effort, government and stakeholders working together to improve the quality of life of the people.
This is the first time ever I've engaged with your air quality except for the standards you do. And I must say firstly that you always have a great patience for this doctor and a great understanding. That's the first thing I'm happy to say. But looking at this, for me, it seems that as you've explained, we come from a bad system where they created a system which has created problems and those problems are catching up with us. But it seems that as we created the new act and we've now started implementing it properly, that gradually we come into grips with this thing. It's actually getting better and better where we can make interventions. So for me, it seems that where we're setting standards for industry, for example, we're doing well. We're actually bringing it down. The problem that we're going to have to deal with is the kind of natural phenomenon, the coal burn. We're going to have to find answers for that. And maybe this emission offset is going to help that. And Then the other thing which I still can't put my head around is the big party, big PM. Because if you look at your picture you showed us, it went kind of generally kind of quite nicely until about 2728. And just like at the time when the rhinos were being slaughtered, 2008, that shoots up tremendously from 2008 for some reason which we haven't given any explanation for. Maybe there is no explanation for it. And now again we're starting to get to grips with it and it's coming down again. So it seems to me that whatever complaints there are about the system, it is starting to work. And it's the natural thing that I call them natural, but I don't think the word is natural. You know, it's the kind of phenomena, the sand laying off the mine dumps, the coal burning, which really are our big problems, and which are also more difficult to deal with. The natural phenomena are more difficult to deal with. Other than, I know Ms. Lippering came with a whole lot of ideas of putting things over those sand dunes, and we have to look at those things seriously, because it's clearly a serious problem. And then, as you say, in some areas it's just like a recipe for disaster. It's a whole lot of issues that come together in one place. So I must say, I'm actually much more encouraged in the sense that I think that what we're doing is working. My bigger worry is I'm not sure we've got answers or needed answers for these so-called natural type of problems. But let's hear, members, this is your chance. Good input, Mr. Stozana. Down there, who is that answer? Ms. Ferguson, Ms. Winger, Mr. Rogers. Okay, all right. Any guys, I'll see your hands. Mr. Stozana?
No,
gentlemen, I must join you by appreciating the report. I should think it's a very nice presentation. We've got a present and a future approach on this matter. It's very important to us, and we appreciate the good work done. Chairperson, on the identification of areas. The report is concentrated particularly in Gauteng and Mpumalanga province. And in Mpumalanga also it's not covering the whole areas. When you go to Nelspruit, moving towards the direction of Waterfall Province, there are areas that are producing. For instance, there is a lot of burning there. There are smoke, they are dealing with tea farms in Edmundotoare. I don't know whether you have got plans for such areas. And again, in Pretoria, you are concentrating Pretoria West, where the Portland Summit is situated. There are factories there next to Metro, but you don't give us a clarity on the part of Amanskraal where there are a lot of factories there, of air pollution, and you move to Limpopo towards that direction, home part, a lot of smoke there. Just want to get a sense on how to prioritize this area. And also, Chair, I must say there is a list of all areas identified. And thank you for that. Some of them are difficult. I know them, but you have respect them. I know them will tell you exactly what they have been. Fine, maybe some of these patients have different dysfunctional from long ago, but I will make it because they're around my area. For instance, we have nothing about Belfast and Belfast. It's another area which is full of pollution. Whether there is a station or a plan for Belfast. say the emitters must report annually for pollution. Are those emitters positive or doing as supposed to do? Because you are saying they must report annually. Are they reporting back to you? And what do you do about those reports if they report to you? Or there are any measures in assisting them? And any measures for those who are polluting deliberately, maybe to try to correct them through legal processes or something else? Because there is an outcry about this pollution. Some of the associations who came before us here, they spoke about Middleburg. And they cried a lot, Middleburg and MLO, and Sosselberg, such issues. How do we correct those people? I should think your proposal in this field, it must assist in addressing those issues. And we were looking forward to support you to deal with this deal and all these issues raised. Thanks, sir.
Thank you, Chair. This is really extremely informative. Opened my eyes a lot about air pollution. I also just want to ask a question about how some of the areas were identified. And sometimes when I live in Cape Town, and sometimes when I look across to the mountain, I see this brown, thick haze across Cape Town. I just wondered about it, but yet when we look at your analysis, foreshore has come down considerably. So I suppose, you know, as you think over a 12-month period, and we have those brown heads at certain times of the year and so forth. But I will say that I am thankful that I moved away from Johannesburg because we lived across from the mine belt. So, we have a lot of, as you've seen by the different analysis, there's a lot of improvement in the different, obviously the different areas, or there is improvement, not obviously, there is improvement all around, say for some of them. Obviously, mining still plays a significant role in as a contributor, and obviously the Eskom. But the interesting thing for me, Dr. was when you spoke about the soil, and how the soil is a huge contributor. Now, when we spoke about in Cape Town, we spoke about Khayelitsha and how Khayelitsha has gone up significantly. And I was just wondering whether soil also plays a role there, whether you have looked at it or whether you will look at that, because certainly it's sort of a wasteland and I'm not scientist, I don't know, but it just seems almost a logical thing. We also spoke about the whole integrated and coordinated approach across the clusters of the different ministries. And you've come up with a very, very interesting and I think excellent way of looking at how we can combat some of the air pollution. I just wondered whether you saw that to the different clusters or to the cluster as to, instead of spending $4 billion on this, let's spend $400 million on that and we can eradicate whole lot of issues, including some of the problems that we're facing. Your audits on the monitoring network, do you believe that you have the kind of expertise to achieve this, to achieve those kinds of plans that you want to put in place? Your maintenance plans, your priority plans? And then on phase three, and maybe I didn't understand correctly, but if you could just tell me on phase three, you spoke about online reporting. But when will this phase be concluded? When will it be fully operational? When will we be able to press the button and see exactly what's happening? And then share just a comment. We are the Department of Environment and we've printed guidelines and I was just wondering why we just put it on as an e-book. Because there are constant changes and that people could download and look at it instead of us printing. That's just a comment.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you very much for the wonderful presentation. As you would gather, I will be concentrating on the Bond Triangle, as I come from there, and I know how bad it is actually. And if you have a look at this one in front of Belfast and the one in Mayo. So these are the two stations of operation at the tables here. I know there's a vast library of power in the EU. I'd like to know how do you disseminate that information in which two stations are not in the EU? Or have you got additional stations that you have staffed which are not on this graph here? And it's not just the graph, but the schedule that you have put together. I would also like to know whether you have taken into consideration the bringing of the South Graph, which is an annual occurrence and it creates major pollution in the area, particularly in the high south area and Malanga with the Graph Road. What I would like to know as well, if I understood you correctly, when the emission licenses are given to various companies, you have the maximum as to what they can emit. Now, if you get the compound emissions of the industry in a concentrated area, let's use the whole time again as an example. Obviously, you're going to need dealing with the standards on the ambient air quality. What measures are you going to be taking into place? Because obviously, it will not make financial sense to the companies that are emitting. You have got the licenses and they are complying with that maximum. Yet, when you compound it, you are exceeding the levels. How are you going to address those issues without it being detrimental to the industry in the area? And I think that if we're looking at the national scale, it looks good. It looks good because it's diluted in some areas, because it dilutes the whole thing. But in some areas, it actually shows that the figures are not looking that good. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Rogers?
Thanks, Chair. Just a couple of questions and maybe some comments. You made the comment that South Africa is one of the highest users or producers of mercury because of coal production. What impact, if any, and what is the way forward to deal with that? You also mentioned three power stations being designed for Botswana. Are those coal-driven power stations? If so, do they have their own coal resource? That's probably not a question I should put to you, but this is something that came to my mind. Then, Chair, an interesting thing on these graphs. Some of them are over a six-year period, some of them are over a four-year period. If you analyze these graphs, other than Cape Town and eThekwini, there's very little consistency or there's no pattern in the information. And my question is quite simply, over the period of 6 or 4 years, is the unified monitoring system that's being used? Because surely we should be showing either a downward or an upward trend. But some of these have absolutely no trends at all and very difficult to analyze.
Thank you, Chair. In the report, there is a report on the enforcement actions taken by the department on the pollutants who do not comply. But what worries is the most, that mostly cases mentioned here, they are still on investigations and have been taking so long. So my question is, why did the investigation take so long and how many have been prosecuted and finally charged for their offenses to date? And the other question is on section 15, 16 and 17 in the AQUA, as for the inclusion of air quality management priorities in the IDPs of municipalities. So how effective is this, and who monitors and what resources are allocated by the municipality, and has the department also undertaken any case study on oversight of this component in the air quality management in municipalities?
Thank you, Chair. Regarding for the presentation, I appreciate this very good one. But I just say from the your page 4 to 9 is for monitoring this station. I saw that this KZN, all this station report is all no. I don't know. This one you say is every report, is every 3 months report one time, or the every month report one time. Just like the beginning, the chairperson asking. If we want to go, we want to go to the station asking what now, up to now. But this one, from the your report, page 6, is all KZN is from 30 to 35. It's all or no report. I don't know this one. How from your department side can enforce for the this report can come in stand? So, you see, so from the Western Cape, other province, everything is looking like the yes, yes, yes. But only this one is all or no. I don't understand why. Then this by municipality for the air quality control. This one all involved all the inside, but why they don't make a report? I'd like to know. Thank you.
Anyone else? All right, well, let's take those along. There's a lot of questions.
Thank you. I'll start with the identification of parish areas. The identification of parish areas is not to say areas outside the parish areas do not have air quality management that is focused to them. They are covered in the air quality management plans of the different provinces and local authorities. For example, in Mpumalanga province, we are currently involved in developing an air quality management plan for the whole province, which will take touch of the parish area one into the and the other sources that are outside the priority area. I must emphasize that it's not other sources are not insignificant. They are just not in the agglomeration area where there is a problem of accidents of air quality standards on a frequent basis. So yes, there is monitoring in Gondwana. We've actually been there talking about the atmospheric emission license. All the other industries are being managed. And also in the Limpopo province, they're also developing, and I think it's just awaiting adoption by council, the provincial air quality management plan is also underway. So there is air quality management taking place in all the different areas of the country. They are just not under the umbrella of
the tools that you use to deal with them. If it's a serious area, you create a priority area, then your tools are more concentrated. In the other areas, you use similar tools, but they won't necessarily be the same as in a priority area. So it applies to the whole country, but it's obviously different prioritization and resourcing where there's the bigger problem.
I couldn't have said it better myself. Thank you. So, in terms of the annual reporting, it's in place since the publication of the Section 21 in 2010. Industries are required to report annually. The only difference is that at the moment it is a hard copy report. What will happen with the subject page? It will be an online report. They will have to report on, but it is happening. And there is a list of enforcement activities that are taken for industries that are non-compliant. But I must say, also, industries don't like to be non-compliant. It does not look good for their public relations and support in the communities where they stay. So that also works to our advantage. Yes, corrective measures have spoken about the enforcement if they are not reporting. How the areas are identified that are prioritized is the exceedance of the ambient air quality standards or the future one, which is the water Bojanaya, to say too much development is coming here, we need focused attention to make sure that we don't get to that area. The brownfields in Cape Town is a phenomenon that we have studied over time quite strongly. And actually the city of Cape Town has implemented different localized interventions to deal with this. Of course, the I don't know whether it's a pink elephant of domestic burning is there, it's big, it's bad. But it was also found that diesel vehicles contribute quite a lot to the brown haze. And so the city of Cape Town has a diesel vehicle emissions testing facility to ensure that the diesel vehicles do not exceed certain limits. So that is the use of the municipal bylaws, taking the municipal bylaws and adopting them to the specific jurisdiction to deal with local problems. That is what it has been done. Self-contribution, yes, it would be, in fact, it is massive in the townships, because that is where there's bare land without any green grass like you have in other areas and vegetation and so on and so on. So it's a big contributor to PM10 emissions as well. And from time to time, we're doing the interventions at different locations because the problems are obviously different, but the municipal bylaws assist to deal with specific local problems.
The coal burning in the township, does it fall under PM10? Or what does it fall under?
It would be mostly PM10 because it's in complete combustion. But there is also PM2.5 and SO2.
So it was thinner, but it will be the PM stuff.
The PM10 would be because
the township stuff burning will be particles in the air.
Yes.
More.
In terms of the clusters, yes, we have sold the the strategies for addressing air pollution in those low income settlements. We are now going in with the vehicle emission strategy. We have not started consulting on the offset policy. We are still under development at the principal level of what we want to build into the policy and then start with it. So we have not started consulting on that. In terms of the audit of monitoring networks, yes, we have schemes. There are, air quality has been accepted to South Africa since 1965. We do have different skill sets at all the spheres of government, but also in the private sector and universities. So I believe in terms of human resource skills, we have that. What we still need to put to be certain of is the funding to be able to implement this system and buy the asset management software that will enable us to see where the problems are, when an intervention and development. But in terms of the human resource skills, they may not all exist at national, but we do have interest. We find that in some cases at the local level, people are more skilled because they work with these things on a daily basis as opposed to policy that says you will then implement it this way. Surface phase 3 will come with the online live reporting of the quality of data. We anticipate that this will start because we have to finish surface phase 2, which is the emissions intervention.
When does 2 start and end?
At the moment, the development of the system for 2 is ending. It's ending. We are piloting it now. So we should, by January 2014, be going full force for industries to be...
For two. Then you'll start 3 in January.
And then you start 3...
You can't do it in parallel.
In now, because to forecast, you need the image. You need an understanding of where the information, where the sources are and how much they are printing. The e-books and the non-printing as I don't think it's an air quality related, but I don't want to blunder and say things about the department. In terms of Sadibeng, the monitoring stations that are non-operational, it's a problem that we are aware of when we are trying to address. This is one of the examples of the problems that exist between the spheres of government, because these monitoring stations were vandalized. Because they are expensive equipment, sometimes, in fact, most times there's a computer there and an aircon. Because if there's a server, there has to be an aircon to cool it down. So they were vandalized and the insurance actually paid because they were insured stations. But the money went into the municipality and went into the fiscus and was never reinvested and realized by the air quality management unit. However, in terms of the, I just want to say this with caution. The monitoring stations were outside the priority, but they are not being ignored. We are working with them. unfortunately, at the moment, we've realized that they have been left for long. They may not be resuscitated. We just may need to buy a complete new set of monitoring stations to make sure that monitoring continues in those areas. Search fires, yes, I forgot to mention in the presentation, it's a very big source, also because it happens during the winter months when we have those temperature inversions. And it falls under one of the difficult sources to control. Although the department has a working on fire program that from time to time puts out veld fires, but they happen at a far bigger scale than the section of the department can control effectively nationally. Okay, I think the issue of the industries being located in the same area, we are looking at, once we've got the surface space to up and running, we have an understanding of what the emissions profiles are in those different areas. We are hoping that we will then use that to decide on the limits of a new plant that's coming in the air. But I must say this because it will give indication of the problems that you face in the environmental management as a whole. Land is bought by people and they own the land, and if a person bought the land to conduct a particular industry, it's difficult for the ecology officer to say you cannot use your land to do that. The ecology officer can give limits, of course, and then manage that. But the other thing is the industries follow the availability of the natural resources. So we will not find a coal-fired plant where there is no coal, for instance. So those are the things that we are juggling with when we manage equipment. In terms of the mercury treaty, it's going to be signed in October, and we believe that after that we'll then ratify it into national legislation and perhaps go into the establishment of ambient air quality standards for that, depending on the feasibility. Of course, I mentioned that we have a problem identification and characterization exercise that we conduct before we get to the decision. The question of monitoring is unified. The disparities are because of what is measured. It doesn't follow what is projected, what we project to be the case. It also doesn't follow what we would like to see in terms of ambient air quality. And that is because of a lot of reasons. Sometimes there's development, sometimes there's excellent research that is done by the academics. For instance, in the 1990s, there was already a study by Professor Tyson that said, in the Highveld era, you should not permit any other sulfur-producing industry. It has not been the case because there's a need for energy in the country as well, and so on and so on. So, but in terms of the monitoring stations, they're using the same methods, and if they do not meet the criteria, they're not included in the state of affairs. The cases for compliance, I think I would leave that for the DG Abada, but I can talk to the how effective the adoption of the AKMPs is in the IGPs. We have done a recent 2010, or 11, an air quality management support program where we were assessing the effectiveness of the air quality management plans, whether they are implementable, they work in reducing the ambient air pollution, and so on and so on. We found that there are problems, but in most cases, the municipalities are taking at least the implementation targets into their IGPs. And then it becomes that complex mixture of all the pollutants in the area.
Just in terms of compliance, Chair, there is a list under Annex 6 in the documentation that gives the cases that we've dealt with in terms of some of the air quality issues. Some of them, yes, they are still under investigation. It's also an area where we have a bit of difficulty in terms of getting specialists to actually come and help us or assist with the putting together of the criminal investigation. That's one of the issues. The other issue is that the actual prosecution is not in the hands of the department. We can take sort of administrative enforcement action up to a point, but when it comes to the prosecution of these crimes, it's actually sitting with the Department of Justice. So that part of it, as far as we go, we prepare a comprehensive docket for the NDPP, and they then decide on whether or not they will prosecute. The other thing also that we've got to consider is that a lot of these industries actually do support livelihoods. So the idea is not necessarily to shut down every single industry. The idea is to actually to bring them into compliance at some point or the other in terms of meeting the air quality standard requirements. Excuse me. So the point is, what we try and do in terms of getting them to comply is to ensure that they don't exceed the emission limit. So the industry still survives, people still have their jobs. So in some instances, we issue a compliance notice, but we're also cognizant of the fact that there are these people working there, and we give them an opportunity to actually come into compliance. If you read the report, you'll see that in some instances, we've given opportunities for industry to come into compliance. Particularly, Engin Durban South was mentioned as well. So there's initiatives to actually bring those industries, you know, into compliance. But there are also instances where, for example, we've completely shut down an operation. I think there is one year where we've actually asked them to cease operations because they definitely not, you know, they're not even making an attempt to try to get into coming to compliance. So those are essentially how we deal with the enforcement and compliance issues around the air quality and meeting the standards.
That sounds a bit insipid. Like this legal man. Like this. Sounds like we need more action here. Look, I can hear all the things you say. I can hear experts, I can hear prosecuting and so on and so on. The only thing I can say is that if we serious about prosecution, then we must take one or two test cases, we must invest in it, get people to do it, and then stop them. Only way to do it. And then once people start getting the prosecuting authority and the cops then start getting more, you know, obviously confident in doing it because we've now assisted and invested in it, well, then hopefully they'll start moving with it. But I would like it to see how you're not doing more of that. I'm not just talking any case, one or two really big cases, and also in communities where they're moaning and complaining so that they can see action has been taken. Now, that's very important that we do. So I give you 6 months for this committee fund before the end of the year. I want to see a huge case being driven by this department against a polluter.
Jay, if you recall, I think it was last year or the year before, and I don't have my compliance people with me, and my memory ain't so good as it used to be, but remember we got that substantial, I think it was a 3 million rand fine for air quality pollution. The courts, I think, asked him to eventually pay 1.5 million, and the balance, the 1.5, was, what's the, excuse my memory, but essentially it was a 3 million rand fine, but they were required to suspend that. So the suspended part of the thing was 1.5 million, so that's a substantial fine in terms of an industry. I think attached to that also was I can get the details for you if you want to. So that it's not like that we haven't done any, and we...
No, I'm not saying we haven't done any, but I'm just thinking we do separate, and we are the prosecuting. What I'm saying is invest and go and get an area, a good test case that's going to make the community happy. You've got experts available in that area, and make sure that you give it to the prosecutor and the platter so we can get something done again. I really think that we're going to do it. I mean, I was pleasantly surprised in a way that the big, you know, usually when NGOs come here, they come here with other NGOs that are very technically, and they take a lot of what they do from them, and they actually write their submission over. Whereas this time, when they came with air quality, they actually came and spoke about the experiences. So I was like, I was really taken by that. That these communities are really out there trying to do something, and obviously with struggling and with limited resources. So we must show them that we're not going to be interested about this, and we're going to find the experts and push the prosecuting authority to get this. But as I say, look for one or two. Don't now expect that they're going to do all the cases. I mean, clearly, you know, they're also limited in what they can do. Go and look, and we must push this thing. We must take on the responsibility. I don't want to hear, you know, prosecuting authorities. I want to hear, this is what we've done. It doesn't deny all the things that are happening now. It's just saying there's a ratchet up, but it's here. Especially now, if you want to sign new standards and so on, let people see that you guys are serious. Okay? Were those all the questions? All of them? Anyone follow up?
The Accord River. Botswana has a lot of coal resources. They share the same belt as we have in the waterbed area, but there is going to be a huge railway line built across the border. So I suppose then that there will be a lot of trafficking of the coal. Yeah, I don't know who's importing and who's exporting there, but they also have the same belt that we have in the waterbed. They have it in the same area. I'm sorry.
All others covered? Any new questions? Any follow-ups? All right, so look, I'm pleasantly surprised. I think that clearly the machinery that is there is not perfect, obviously. But what it does show me when I look at these things, that clearly as we get deeper into it, obviously with guidance like with yourself as the boss, that there's definitely improvement being shown. I like your action at the end. You pushed all the right buttons, the maintenance of your station, upgrading your skills, audits, hopefully they're better than the defense offsets were. The emission offsets and those kinds of things. But I do think that, Ms. Beaumont, it's clear to me that we're going to have to give serious thought to the PM10 and 25s. Those are natural things that there's surely some control we can have. And as Ms. Lieferink came and gave her input here about the mines up in Joburg, she was very much for putting kind of netting and things on it, and that's the very least I think we can expect from those mine owners and so on. I would have also liked to see if we can find some reason why there was a huge increase from the time that rhinos were being poached. I don't know if there's a link between the two. As rhino poaching went up, so the particles in the air went up. So I don't know if we've got that kind of research, because I do think we must try and have a look at it, because we must make sure it doesn't happen again. I mean, just give me that, just show me that that slide again, where it compares with it. I think it's close to the end here. You see there? Actually, it's the other slide. This one also, but the other there, at the bottom. You see, it's like going along from 1994, since we had democracy. Now, this act comes into play in 2007. And it's actually around this time that it starts to increase, and then it actually increases so much more, and then we start dealing with it. Now, I'm very, very keen to see what is that. You have from 2004, look at that. 2003.
Thank you. This is the time where we started improving air quality monitoring in the country. We had more stations now monitoring and reporting. So we got a better understanding of the problem. The number of air quality monitoring stations increased. That is why
it could have been worse previously.
It could have been worse previously. We just didn't know because we were not measuring. That is why.
So we can't blame it on the party.
No. That is why we are saying, in terms of the national air quality indicator reporting period, we want to fix it to avoid situations such as this, so that we have a 5-year reporting period where it is constant.
As you improve it, you get better quality. But what it also does is exposes, it's like the rape issue. I mean, the more people feel comfortable to report, the more the numbers escalate. You think it's worse, but it's actually it's probably been similar, but more people are reporting. Okay, well, that's interesting. Well, let's keep it going down. But okay, so those are good. You know, you spoke about there are draft regulations and something you spoke about right in the beginning. Now, I don't know how long, many times I'm going to say this to this department, but I've said it over and over that when you've got regulations that you process in, particularly when they're public and so on, you should give them formally to the committee, so that people that have expertise and experience can give inputs into that kind of process. It's no good that every time we get these things at the end, like, you know, we get these standards now and then there's a huge problem and no one's followed it up and so on. So that I can look at these things as chairperson and see, well, do I want you to come and talk to us before these things are passed, so that one has an idea about it, and that we're not always after the thing. So you guys must start, particularly you, Mr. Abada, you the leader guy, you guys must get this right from the boss. I mean, it's all well to have us as stakeholders, but if we always are on the hind tip as the dogs, you know, the one at the end here. Yeah. That's not going to help us much, because like, that's not a partner, that's the black sheep at the back, right at the back there. So you must try and move us up. The strong dogs are at the top here, or the strong kittens are at the top here. Stop keeping us at the weak spot there. Bring us to the forefront. Make us enlightenment. Make us part of your endeavor so we can be stakeholders and not unknowns. Okay? You guys must all remember this. This unit must remember it. I never again want to say this to climate change stroke equalities. This is the last time. And legal definitely the last time as well. I'm not sure if we need any follow-ups at the moment. We need the test case. Definitely follow up on the mercury stuff and so on, but nothing stops you from letting us know, say every 6 months, a short little report, just to say this is what's happening, this is new, the sampling is still going in the right direction, which is downwards, except for this or that. Give us a little report, I guess, so that we can see whether there's a necessity to call you back at some stage to follow up. But other than that, I think overall, from what the committee members have all said, you can all see that we are quite happy with what is happening in this area. But we must now do one or two things. The communities, I think this SAQUIS is really as important, because for people to have access to it freely, not every 3 weeks. I mean, you know, if you want, like, I mean, if you want to know the air quality, but you can only get it when it's what it was 3 months ago. I mean, it doesn't really help. So we have to move with these things, really. We must put resources into move with it so that becomes a much more kind of interactive process where one can and people. And it'll also make your monitoring easier, because if these NGOs are involved, tell you, but look, things are actually going backwards here, then at least, you know, there's are things that. So all those things can be done better, but as I say, I think on the whole that the committee is very satisfied. What if tomorrow now, you sort it out for tomorrow, you're going to come and talk to us?
Thanks, Joe. Yes, we are.
what we've done is had the consultations with the various groups, focusing on the technical issues that needed to be resolved. We have not got to the point, however, of what this means in terms of drafting. So I think that this would be a...
Can you just report back on what you've done so far?
Yes. The last meeting only took place at the end of last week.
I understand. I'm just wondering, do you think it's worth us then hearing from you or not? Or do you think we should rather have more time to think what you need to do with it? And particularly, did you see that opinion that Legal Resources said? What is your view on that?
I think we can certainly come and present to the committee, and then the outstanding matter, which is one, we can send documents after the perspective of what was outstanding. In terms of the legal opinion from Angela Andrews, it is actually concurring with what we've been saying, that the minister may can amend the
But she seems to conclude strongly that there has to be such a process. And I was... The issue I asked for your opinion on it, because with all respect, I mean, it's a typical lawyer's document where it says a lot, but in the end you don't really know what it's saying. And I'm saying that with respect, not in a disrespectful way, because I didn't study it, I just went through it quickly. That's why I wanted to hear your views on it, because you see, the one thing, it's no use we going through these processes if there's a legal obligation to create a committee like that. And we didn't do it. Because then, even if we're uncertain about it, because what's going to happen then is the first company that doesn't do something or is challenged or taken to court, they're going to challenge the standard and say that it was illegally passed. So we're making ourselves vulnerable. So that's the first, as a lawyer, our first issue I want to have sorted out that we are clear on. Because I would rather wait a little bit longer. Even if you give it the whatever your new proposal is to SADS, and to say to them, at least comment on this and let us know what your views on it, so that at least we can say that there was some consultation process on it. It may not be what people would desire, but at least, you know, then clearly there was a process like that. So, I don't think what they're saying in the opinion is what you guys are saying.
She actually called after sending the opinion and said that she understands that the minister can proceed without the FAPS, but they have to be technical committees, which is what happened on the 6th and 7th of June, as agreed with all stakeholders who met on the 15th of May. So the technical discussion that she has been calling for happened on the 6th and 7th. And the members...
So after we asked and then you... Yeah, but that is not... You see, what she's raising is the SABS committee. So you consulting is one thing. That's good practice. But whether there's a technical committee of experts that has looked at your proposal and given an opinion on it, then again, you don't have to necessarily comply with it, but at least they then... That is a different process.
Yes, President, but the SABS committee that was there is the same people. The Angela Andrews, the Yushin Tenkos, especially from the industry. So it's been the same people in those meetings as well.
But Gigi, you're not a lawyer. Let me try and explain. If the law says to you that there must be a committee of experts that's comprised like this, then you call a meeting, you bring them, but you also have other people in the meeting with you. That's not complying with you. See what I'm trying to say? The mere fact that at some stage you met with them and asked their views doesn't mean you're complying with that kind of the creation of a technical committee to give its opinion on it, where they sit quietly, you're not sitting casually. Give it to them, you say, okay, I'm waiting for your meeting. And then a week later, whatever, they give you the view. That's a different process. So we must be careful. Look, all I'm trying to say to you guys, it is not worth wasting hours and hours of your time to create a standard. And somewhere along the line, if someone goes and challenges it on a procedural matter of consultation, and then it is meant, it's like anything. You know, in our constitution, you can find something to be unconstitutional merely on a procedural, not on a substantive, on a procedural, can be found to be unconstitutional if you didn't find that follow the right procedure. Now, here is even the lesser situation with regulations and so on. I'm just trying to explain the process of you can stumble, and I see it in government so much, so often, that we stumble and lose court cases. At the end of the day, people don't really know why you've lost it. If you don't read the judgment, it was because of some consultation process that the judge feels is not sufficient. Not whether I feel it's sufficient, whether you feel it, whether the judge feels. And if there is strongly an inimicity to our processes, then at least there must be a technical structure that looks at it as a technical structure, not as a consultation process, but as a technical structure. Then I would rather urge the department to go through that process. I mean, you're not going through that whole other process where it's limited, but at least say to them, well, comment on this one and give us your view. Because you see, Ken Cross was there, professor, and he raised on some issues, he said, well, I'm not really sure what they're doing here because I didn't see the further processes. Now, if one of the guys on the technical committee says that to you now in a meeting like this, if a court ever asks him to call him to come give evidence and he says that, that's not good for him. So rather let them go through a process where they, you know, properly say those things and you give them a chance to consult with them and at least you hear their view. Then you decide what you want to do if you don't want to listen. A lot of the other things, of course, I mean, may not be so problematic. So I do think, I'm wondering if we shouldn't then give you guys a chance and then let you finish all your processes. Finish all your processes and then call you back after the receipt sometime. Doctor, what do you think?
But in the meeting, I wanted just to go back to say, I think we have prepared, because we have prepared and can present and indicate what is outstanding. In the workshop of the 15th, we went through the program and agreed on things that were supposed to be discussed by the technical group, and they met on the 6th and 7th of June. The technical group, only policy people were not interfering, and they have met. So I think on that basis.
All right, look, you adamant. Let's come tomorrow. I hope you don't disappoint me. I hope you don't mess up today. I'll let you come and then I'll listen to you. Okay? So tomorrow morning, 9:30. Here again. And then that's 9:30, say, 2 hours. 10, so around 11:30 the Transfrontier. Who's the Transfrontier? Guys will be ready. All right, so that's tomorrow. Everyone happy?